March 1st marked the beginning of Child Life Month, a month where we pause and celebrate all the incredible ways that this profession continues to impact and support our communities facing chronic illness throughout the world. In this episode, we are joined by Meredith Cooper and Missy Hicks, two child life specialists and the co-founders of Wonders and Worry. Welcome to Wondercast, a community collaborative podcast supporting families navigating the complexities of chronic illness. Wondercast is supported by the generous sponsorship of Texas Oncology. Texas Oncology, more breakthroughs, more victories, experts in cancer care. This year, Wonders and Worries will be celebrating their 25th anniversary of providing community-based support to families impacted by their caregivers' chronic illness. Meredith and Missy have created such a legacy within our profession, and I am delighted to share them with you today. This is Missy and Meredith.
Thanks so much for having us today, Julie. I am Missy Hicks. I have been a child life specialist for 37 years. I'm also a licensed mental health counselor. I currently live in Raleigh, North Carolina. I have one daughter. She's in college. And I also love spending time on Cape Cod as it's such a special place to our family. Came into child life as a undergrad, have loved this field and this profession ever since.
Meredith, again, Julie, thank you so much for having us. This is a treat. I have been a child life specialist for over 30 years. I'm not sure exactly how far back to count it. Fell in love with child life as well in undergraduate school. Moved to Austin, Texas when I met my husband as an undergraduate and pursued the dream of child life back when there wasn't even a children's hospital in Austin. I am married for over 50 years now. We have three adult children, a son and two daughters, with amazing daughter-in-law, two son-in-laws, and eight grandchildren, eight and under.
I kind of cannot believe that I have not had either of you as a guest before through all these seasons. When I was thinking about it, I was like, how is that even possible? But it is such an honor to have you both here and to have you together. I think that that is something I personally have not gotten to see much because we're not all in the same rooms very often. And so our virtual room here, it's a nice change to get to be together. One of the things that I love is that as the founders of Wonders and Worries, I feel like you have such wealth to contribute with your knowledge and your experience, especially as the field continues to grow in new ways. Our national reach, our ability to reach people outside of the walls of the hospital continue to grow every year. I think that we would be remiss if we didn't have your wisdom to just kind of help talk through how all that came to be. So if you feel comfortable, I would love for you both to share about how Wonders and Worries first came to be.
Well, Missy and I connected through a shared passion for supporting children when it was their parent with a serious illness. We had both been child life specialists working with children that had cancer and realized the incredible need that was there for children when it was their parent or primary caregiver that was experiencing the illness. It's always fun to remind people that are listening that we connected through our profession, child life. Missy was moving to Austin. I'll let her take it from there, but I was in the midst of getting my LPC as well to prepare me for this additional work, working with adults with illness, when Missy moved to Austin.
So yeah, it was sort of serendipitous, really, that I was relocating to Austin. And so I reached out to Meredith on a whim. I knew I was moving. I knew I loved this profession. I was fortunate to be very involved with our professional association, Association for Child Life Professionals, called Child Life Council at that moment, that way back in 25 years ago, and just sort of made a cold call to her and said, you're a child life specialist. I'm a child life specialist. I'm moving to town. Would love to connect. I knew we both had worked in pediatric oncology. And so when we connected, it was sort of like everything aligned perfectly. You know, we both were working in hospital-based settings, understanding the needs of children with cancer, getting consulted to the adult service lines at those institutions, and really both had that really strong desire to, one, fill the gap for those children of adult patients, but then two, really thinking about our childlike background in a hospital setting, our sort of counseling trajectory that we were on, sort of looking at that skill set, but then also importance of community-based programming, because I think we both had realized that when you're in a hospital and you're looking to refer out to somebody, sometimes it's hard to find someone with that same lens. You know, we weren't looking for necessarily children who were impacted by a clinical mental health diagnosis, but really a typical child coping with an atypical situation. And sort of that piece could really be provided in a community-based setting. That sort of intersection of all of those things led us to connecting and collaborating, which is so fun to think back on. Because when you think about it, Meredith, right, it was like, here we are, two clinicians. We both straight clinicians, you know, delivered clinical service. And here we are starting a business with sort of like skills coming at us, like little bits, but we were never trained that way in our undergraduate training. Or even graduate school for me. And so that piece of it was a fun growth curve for us, but definitely had us stepping outside of our initial comfort zone.
That's so true on multiple levels. My graduate work was focused on programming. And when I realized that I wanted to work with adults who had illness along with their children, then I went back for my LPC too. So all of my education also was based more in the programming realm. Playing on what Missy said, part of the synergy that works so well between Missy and me was the fact that Missy had such a breadth of connections and experience on a national level, having been at Johns Hopkins, being very involved in our professional association, whereas I was local. I had been in Austin for years, my husband's family for years before that, before I even moved in undergraduate school. What was challenging at the time in the business realm was essentially, Austin in particular was going through an economic downturn with basically the tech bust. What we were facing to launch a business, we not only had no skill sets for, but the community was very reticent to think about another nonprofit startup when everything was going bankrupt. So to even get someone to trust us that we could rent office space was a huge undertaking. And again, Julie, Missy had some amazing connections through Livestrong to give us initial funding. I knew people in Austin that knew we wouldn't back out on our word and that if we said we were going to pay rent, we would be good for it. Again, it was just even those kind of nitty gritty practical things that allowed us to move forward.
It really was a complementary skill set, right? When I think about you and myself, Meredith, we came at it with two different things and we synergized so beautifully to be able to create this. And when I think back about how we started from nothing and where Wonders and Worries is today, it is amazing to me.
And Julie, thinking about this podcast, two things that I wanted to emphasize from my perspective, because I hear a lot of child life specialists having that clinical skill of assessment, seeing a need that they're passionate for and wondering how they can move forward to make that difference. I think Missy and I both were very fortunate that we had husbands that were supportive of us. And I mean that not only emotionally. I remember the place I was when my husband looked at me and said, if you're really serious about this, do it all the way. But he backed me up financially, allowing us to have the resources to pursue our dream. And I think Missy would say the same thing about Henry.
Yes, agreed. And I also think about they also put their nitty gritty into it too, right? Like they really came in and I remember them painting the walls of our office and, you know, hooking up our computer systems and things like that. So we were very fortunate in that we had support and resources surrounding us.
And the other thing I would say is that for me, I was basically 46 years old when Wonders and Worries started. Life happens and your journey can be many different ways. And sort of my dream came up to fold after I was married, after I had done quite a bit of school work, had children. I was not 30 starting Wonders and Worries by any means.
And I was new. I was married, but I didn't have children yet, right? So it was sort of the, again, our balancing act between both of us.
Do you feel like you ran into any sort of conflict or any sort of pushback from the model that maybe was more traditional child life at that time in the hospital-based setting? Or do you feel like the community was very open to the idea of this programming transitioning to in the community?
Well, I'll speak because I was known in Austin, thankfully. I had been involved through the Junior League of helping to launch the Child Life Program, the Ronald McDonald House before that. I was the first pediatric oncology child life specialist in Austin. Things were so new back then. And I think we had credibility because Missy brought a wonderful background. I had been in the community, and I think they kind of just looked at it like, well, you've got another idea. Okay, there you go, Meredith.
When I think about child life specialists going into the community that at that time, I was just coming off of being president of the ACLP board and sort of at that leadership level. We've been talking. It was really new, though, about child life specialists working outside of a hospital setting. We were trying to get our grounding and our footing within healthcare institutions, right? And so that conversation, I think it did come with some, wait, what? Where are we going to go? Like, how can we do this? We're still establishing ourselves in hospitals. How can we do this work? But even back then, at our sort of professional organization level, we were talking about where can we go at some point. But again, that balance of, gosh, we need to establish ourselves in a hospital or in healthcare settings before we push out. So I think the minds were open for that conversation. We were having them and, you know, really starting to talk about where else can child life specialists work, which when we think about our skill set, right, it can translate so many different places. So really like that balance of where's our foundation and where's our history and where do we identify? But then how do you broaden that and how do you feel good about broadening that, still staying true to who you are as a profession? So that was definitely happening at that time as we were branching out. I felt grateful that minds were open, you know, to the possibility, but I think it still needed some proof. Like where's the proof, or how does this work and how can it look? And how do you maintain the integrity of who we are as child life specialists if you're moving somewhere else as well?
So then in the beginning, was it very imperative for metrics sake to be able to show the validity of what y'all are doing? How did you document that to show that there was that need in the community?
That's a good point, Julie. On multiple levels, I think Missy and I always had the awareness that what we were doing was big, that we were meeting a need that was unmet across the country, and that we hope to start something in Austin that would be foundationally solid enough to move across the country. So from the very beginning, we really did invest, even in our very limited budget, we invested in evaluation. We paid an independent evaluator to create a survey for us that we administered, and she analyzed the data. From the very beginning, we started establishing how we were going to go about with research. We were trying to put the programmatic foundational evaluation components together, but also we realized it was important to start benchmarking things for a child life program to measure its quality in a community setting.
When I think back even further than that, Meredith, from the very beginning, so when we decided we were going to, you know, talk to Live Strong, Lance Armstrong Foundation at that point, when we were going to talk to them about an initial grant, we knew that we would potentially open a floodgate, right? So we were prepared, and ultimately it did happen, that the sort of, if you build it, they will come. So we opened it up and were able to sort of do the initial groups with the funds we had, but we knew we would end up with a wait list, right? And that was sort of an uncomfortable space for us to be sitting in, right? Because like Meredith said, we knew it was going to be big. Eventually, like in our minds, like we knew it could grow very big, but you also have to be okay with that initial part of open the gate a little bit. And now we knew we needed to move on to the next steps, right? So that part in the very, very beginning was something we needed to learn to live with or balance in our minds.
How incredible it is to say that this nonprofit has been around now for as long as it has, and that is not a commonplace thing that you hear very often anymore. And I can just think how, as a child life professional, how encouraging that is for people who are having this dream in a role of child life that they enjoy, but they just see so much more for it. I think it is very encouraging to see, well, this person does my job and they had an idea and they serve their community and they're continuing to grow. What would you say, in your opinions, helped contribute to that growth?
So I think there's a lot of things, right? And when I look back over these 25 years, it's sort of like, I feel like I swell with pride, right? One is having sort of that clear mission and that clear focus. In the beginning, we sort of had a broader mission and got some really good advice that we needed to hone in on specifically what our population we were going to serve was going to be. You know, we initially started with, you know, children impacted by illness, period. So the child could have had the illness, a sibling could have had the illness, or a parent. And that was big and that was broad. And so we got some really wonderful advice to be able to focus on that really initial gap in service, which was the children of adult patients, because that was an unmet need in the community. And I think that was key to focus on an unmet need moving forward. So that clear mission, I think, was important. And then the strategic growth as we have moved along through these 25 years, you know, really being thoughtful about how we grow, how quickly we grow, and where we grow to, and thinking about those action steps in between. And I think the other piece too is, as clinicians, knowing where our skills as clinicians stop and where we need to engage and really tap into resources and network of people that have skills outside of ours, and really rely on those and acknowledge the importance of those skills that other people bring to the table.
Part of it is, for me, humility, because I was the executive director for 15 years. And as we grew, the message I heard from the community was great programming, not so great business model. And we were a nonprofit relying solely on kind of the traditional nonprofit funding. And business is not my skill set. As the organization, the board supported Missy's and my original concept of growing this outside of Austin, I realized that I needed to step aside. I didn't love nor had the abilities in a business world to really guide the organization forward to the level that we want it to be now and in the future. So part of it's humility, but as Missy said, bringing on all these incredible people, just like you, Julie, I could no more put a podcast together.
I mean, I feel like I was the very same too. It was a very big learning curve, but it's getting there.
We have a lot of people now that have tremendous desire to be learning like you and bringing their passions, their skill sets to Wonders and Worries. So I do think finding great people who have great skills to contribute and believe in our mission has been a key to our success.
I agree.
One of the things that we talk about often, Meredith, is the culture of experimentation, right? Yes. And sort of really adopting that, which, you know, I'll be honest, initially coming as a clinician, some of that made me a little anxious to start with, but have realized that that really has propelled our growth forward. And sort of the thought of coming up with ideas, trying them, and then evaluating them and realizing that it's okay to say, you know what, maybe that isn't sort of the right way for us, or maybe that's not a right program delivery option for us. And that's okay. And I think that us doing that, utilizing those resources that have different skill sets outside of our own to help make those decisions, was extremely important. So I feel like as we move forward, the programs that we deliver, we can feel really confident in that we didn't knee-jerk reaction start something. We might have started something and piloted it. And if it is like has landed on something that is a service that we deliver, we are confident with it. We feel good about it if that is going to stay on our sort of service menu, so to speak, as we move forward. I mean, I think that has been really important for our growth, and also thinking about different ways that we want to deliver service, right? Over time, the world has changed, and the world has changed the way people want to receive information, the way they want to receive support. And we have had to adapt to that. And I think that we've done that beautifully. The podcast is a great example, or having the apps. We're looking at the way the world works and how our services can integrate into that to provide the best support for families in a way that's most meaningful to them. And that, I think, is a huge piece of our success.
I think that really was a business concept that Alex brought to the organization. As child life specialists, we wanted everything to be 100% perfect before we approached a client family with whatever new programming idea we had. And Alex really brought that idea of experimentation, metrics to evaluate, and layered that again back to sort of that humility that we have and a sense of teamwork that we all are able to be vulnerable enough to assess if something is working or not working.
I think that you both and Alex have done a very intentional job about having a varied strength system within your board. I feel like you have people that are both from a programming perspective as well as from a business mind, from a community-based mind. At what point did the board come to be a part of Wonders and Worries?
Well, from the very beginning, because you have to have a board, at least three members, to file with the Secretary of State. Something that was also a wonderful opportunity that Austin offered, especially in the early 2000s when we were starting Wonders and Worries, there were a vast number of resources in the Austin community for nonprofits. And I can remember going to trainings around board development and basically being told, You're not going to put your best friends on your board that are just going to nod their head and say, sure, whatever you think, Meredith. You want to find people of diverse backgrounds, different skill sets. And so we really relied, especially in the first 10 to 15 years, on a lot of training to know how to effectively develop a board. They are the owners of the organization. They're the trustees that the community enables with their funds to oversee our business.
I know you both individually, and I love the collaboration that you have as a team, but I especially love it because you are both so different. And I feel like that is something that has really contributed to the longevity of this organization, is you don't have two identically minded people that are approaching things in the same way. So in your own perspective, I would love to hear, what has been your favorite part of the organization's growth, or just the organization overall? I'm sure it's very different because you are each your own person.
The people, definitely the people. I love our team, the people that we get to work with within Wonders and Worries, but I also especially love the client families that we meet. And I think my favorite thing about getting older is being able to see, in the midst of really difficult circumstances, how people can be given tools that allow them to thrive and grow. I love seeing some of our clients that were just teenagers or even kids when we first started, who are now successfully parenting their own children. And it's just a reminder for me personally that sometimes when you feel like you're in the midst of something really hard, it can work out. And there's a lot of hope for the future. So those are my favorite things about Wonders and Worries: people and the hope for the future.
Yeah. So, gosh, there's so many favorite things about Wonders and Worries. When I think about sort of how over the years, how it has grown, I like beam with pride. It makes my heart so happy. But I think we can only have done that because of the people we're surrounded by, right? So I agree with Meredith in the fact that it is the people. Like, and I live afar, right? So I moved away from Austin after about the first 3 years, and I kind of call myself the boomerang, right? I'm either on the board as a co-founder or I'm back as an employee. And so I've got to watch it from the outside, how we've grown. And I always say how lucky we are, the staff that we have and the amazing skill set. I can't say enough about the quality of people that we have within Wonders and Worries. And I think that's the only way you can grow. So that is amazing to me. And that is one of my favorite things, is to see sort of how we have surrounded ourselves with such amazing people. The other piece about it, I think, is that clinical piece and the piece of when I directly provided services to families, but even also now, as I sort of look at other options for programming, it's that resilience of children, right? And giving them the credit or the acknowledgement that children can do hard things, even if you don't think they can. Like, given the right tools and the right resources, I think they are amazingly resilient and they can cope with just about anything, provided that have those skills readily accessed, you know, accessible to them. But I think with that support, they can tap them and achieve amazing things, even through a difficult situation. That part of it as well. What I also love is just the fact that Wonders and Worries was able to start as a child life specialist created organization and grow into this organization now that, you know, within Texas, but then also even worldwide, we have a reputation now of having clinical excellence. We have a lot of expertise and sort of that reputation I am proud of. I think that is an amazing testament to sort of what has been created by all of us at Wonders and Worries, and able to sort of support families outside of Texas. That ability for us to provide the content and the necessary resources and support has been extremely important and valuable.
Julie, I'd have to interject too that when Missy was talking, it was reminding me of all of our donors. We have just had some incredible supporters, board members, donors that have believed in our dream for 25 years and stayed with us. And I'm so grateful for them too. That's one of my absolute favorites also.
I love it all. I have just loved working here. It's nice to find where you fit. Being a naturally curious person, I love the encouragement that you're given to grow that curiosity and try new things, connect with other people that are like-minded across the country and say, let's see how this works. Let's try this initiative. I feel like oftentimes when you are sometimes stuck in the confines of a hospital-based budget or, you know, the bureaucracy that goes with hospital-based child life, I think sometimes you run into some of those limits where we can't grow our skills and grow our natural curiosity.
think that curiosity ties in with our name because we wonder.
Absolutely. Is there anything specific that you would like to share for maybe one of our listening audience members who might be a clinician or a child life staff or even an OPC or a social worker who has this passion for doing something out of the role that maybe they're currently doing it in, but would like to grow their skill or share a skill that they have in the community? Do you have any advice for them?
So I think I would say, go for it, right? Like, don't limit yourself by what you think something should be or how something should look or what your role has always been. I think that you really need to open your mind. But I also would put the caution in there that you need to be thoughtful about it, right? So really dig in and do your diligence. Think about, what is it I want to accomplish? What is the gap in service? Really do a good assessment, a needs assessment of the community. We may think something's a great idea, but the community might not perceive it the same way, right? So really doing a good assessment, but then also an internal assessment. You know, like, why do I want to do this? What am I hoping to accomplish? Being really clear about that, I think, is super important. But anything is possible. Two child life specialists had this idea, and now look at us 25 years later. We would have never guessed that we are a national support organization. We wanted to be, but, you know, in the beginning, you kind of have to think about that. Knowing you can do it, but making sure you take the right action steps to get there. I also think making sure that you utilize your resources and you do a good dive into where you're getting your content from and making sure it's good, reliable sources. So really getting some quality consultation and, you know, even if it's clinical practice and supervision surrounding it. So making sure you're providing yourself with a solid foundation as you're trying to move forward.
I think that's well said. I have tried in this time we've had, Julie, to interject just that probably my pathway's not to maybe the norm that some people might expect, but by all means, if you have the skill set to address a need, and as Missy said, you've assessed and realized that it's a viable option, go for it.
It's hard, I think, for some child life specialists right now. I feel like the populations that maybe don't have the benefit and privilege of having the economic support from a partner or spouse, they're trying to find creative ways to grow their services and support to the community. And I do feel like it's overwhelming and it's scary because right now we're just in an unstable financial protection in the field.
Sure.
But I do think that is also an opportunity, really thinking about how you can pitch the idea or the services outside the community, because I think that will open some doors for sure. I think as the community understands more about what child life specialists can offer or bring to the table, I think more doors will open. As far as the skills of a child life specialist, thinking about how you present your skills to people who may not be that hospital-based decision maker, how do you present your skills to a school? How do you present your skills and what you can bring to the table to a nonprofit organization that is delivering within the community? It's important to sit down and think about, this is what I have to offer, and how can I present it to someone so they understand my language, they understand what I can bring to the table? Or what are some things that I can do to model what I can do so that they can see it in action and then realize the value of it and hopefully then buy into the, we need a child life specialist on staff, or we need someone providing these psychosocial support services in our organization.
Child life is the foundational perspective. But geez, like, I ran the kids' pediatrician, grandchildren's pediatrician at this point. Yeah, I love that she's a pediatrician, but she has a child life undergraduate degree. You can layer the theoretical framework of child life onto other degrees if you have the capability of doing a graduate level program. And I do think potentially thinking that through an undergraduate school, we sort of both glossed over the fact that we, you know, have LPCs. So those were always good backup plans.
But I think it has to do also with not so much the title of a job, like you want to provide support to children in some arena, right? Maybe not focusing so much on the title of the job, but focusing on what that job that they're hiring for is trying to accomplish. And do our skills as child life specialists match that? And then it becomes the pitch, right? It becomes the, how do I present my skills to match this job description? Then hopefully they would, you know, flash the title, you know, program director / child life specialist, so that you can still acknowledge the skills you're bringing. But it's that creative thinking about what can a child life specialist do with their skills.
For those that are listening to the podcast that aren't child life specialists, but would love to know how to support this population better,
there is that opportunity to take the lens or the frame of a child life specialist and apply it to other professions working with children in those environments, I have many hospitals who have talked to us about the potential to take our continuing education course on the impact of illness and injury on children. And so that would give them a framework when they're walking into a room. I've had physicians say, I don't want to do the child life job. I don't want to do your job, but I want to feel competent. When I walk in there to talk to my patient and their 8-year-old is sitting there, I want to be helpful and not harmful, right? And so that baseline knowledge is something that really is beneficial across the board. So we have the continuing education courses. We have the Registered Wonders and Worries Provider Program, which would give clinicians, child life specialists, other licensed mental health professionals, the content that we base our services on, sort of that theoretical framework, and also our, you know, clinically validated curriculum that they could be trained in to deliver within their community, which is sort of that beautiful model when I think about how we've grown Wonders and Worries from Central Texas, and then we're a Texas-based organization to a national organization. We aren't putting Wonders and Worries in all these other places. What we are doing is allowing other professionals to utilize our experience, our content to support the families in their communities. And so that training is the way we're providing that national outreach to families outside of Texas. And so those clinicians can participate in our training programs and be able to deliver the content and then have the support of our staff and our resources as they move through. So if they have a question, they can certainly call us and access us. So I think those are some ways that people can get the skill set and the content and feel comfortable working with children of adult patients.
As we celebrate these incredible two trailblazers of the profession, we take pause to honor your own path too. Perhaps you are a child life specialist, listening to this episode and eager to grow their role into something new. Maybe feeling frustrated with the limits of that growth potential, exhausted by budget constraints, weary with the elevated cost of living, or juggling your work-life balance without compromising your healthy boundaries. We see you. We value the incredible work that you are doing and need your representation in our professional community. We encourage you to plug in with your colleagues, engage in professional organizations like the ACLP, and continue to challenge the status quo. Together, let's continue to grow this incredible profession. Happy Child Life Month. Thank you for tuning in to our podcast today. Please subscribe and continue to check back as our content is ever evolving. For questions or specific content-related requests, please send an email to podcast@wondersandworries.org.